que pasó, tratalo bien. No sé lo que faltó. Am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
Broadcasting from
occupied
territory.
This segment of Radio Free Aslan will reflect on August 29, 1970, Chicano Moratorium March against the Vietnam War. Today's host is Jose G. Moreno from the Chicano Development Center and ASA Press Media Association.
And Luis Moreno from the Chicano Development Center.
Today's speaker for this segment is Pablo Seves, which is a member of Yo Navario. Mr. Seves has a long history of being involved in the Chicano Mexicano movement here in the U.S. He has been involved as a national coordinator of the National Chicano Moratorium Committee that has led over four commemoration events in the last 20 years. Mr. Seves brings a long history of activism and organizing to the table tonight. Mr. Seves will, you know, give examples on what's the meaning of the Chicano Moratorium and why people still today commemorate the event. What does August 29, 1970 mean?
August 29, 1970 means, and to me, and I think to most of us who are involved in the liberation struggle, is the Chicano Moratorium. And that being the largest raza demonstration or concentration or mobilization of against the Vietnam War, but not only the Vietnam War, but against conditions raza face in Aztlan-occupied Mexico and continue to face as well. August 29th, we have to remember, was the culmination of well over a year of chins, marchas, demonstrations on campuses and throughout communities, foros, press conferences, really taking a Chicano-Mexicano, a Mexicano-Raza stance against the war in Vietnam. And so August 29th, first of all, is that. I think secondly, August 29th, for those of us who study history in Mexico, like who know about things like the massacre of Tlatelolco, who know about things like the massacre of El Jueves de Corpus or El, you know, 10 de Junio, June 10th. Actually, August 29th is one of the still largest repressive acts by the U.S. government, represented by the LAPD, the L.A. Sheriffs, and probably some other agencies that were there, including the FBI, against one of our demonstrations ever known. So this was a march where there were three people dead, the great journalist Rubén Salazar, Ángel Díaz, Lynn Ward, both valiant, valiente brown berets, heroes of the, you know, and patriotas, and also hundreds of people gassed, burned, locked up, beaten. So it's a bittersweet day. It's probably the largest raza mobilization against the Vietnam War and movement against the Vietnam War conditions at home. It's probably the largest non-white-led demonstration against the Vietnam War within U.S. borders and of that entire time period, but it's also one of the most savage acts of repression in a single day against our gente.
We will return to Pablo Seves' interview after this short clip of 20 Years Ike.
There's been a shootout. Out. At the Silver Dollar. Have you heard about it, fellas?
August 29th, 1970. A hot, sunny Saturday morning in Los Angeles. And halfway across the world in Southeast Asia, the Vietnam conflict rages on. It is a war that requires more and more young men to satisfy its appetite. Throughout the year, in protest to the growing and disproportionate number of young Chicano men being sent to the front lines, as well as to protest against the oppression at home, a series of demonstrations, sit-ins, and high school walkouts were held. Soon, the Brown Berets and the Chicano student organization Mecha joined with other Chicano activists and issued a call to Nuestra Raza to mobilize for a national Chicano moratorium against the Vietnam War. No one knew how many people would join in this anti-war protest. What we did know was while Chicanos represented 10% of the southwestern United States population, they accounted for more than 20% of that region's casualties in Vietnam. No one knew that August 29, 1970 would be looked upon as both the turning point in strength and unity for the Chicano Movimiento as well as a day of its attempted suppression. No one knew that August 29, 1970 would forever change our lives.
Returning to Pablo Seva's interview, what's the importance of this event and why people still commemorate this event?
You know, the importance of the event, I think is it's probably many-fold. I mean, for one, you know, the event itself, and when I say the event, I think we have to talk about the entire mobilizing effort of the Chicano Moratorium with, you know, organizations like the Brown Berets, like MECHA, like the Crusade for Justice, and I'm only naming a few, and of course the Chicano Moratorium Committee that formed. The importance of that mobilization and that event was that finally RASA was articulating, and I think we had, but on a national scale and an international level, we were able to come together on a pretty broad platform and connect the U.S. war against the Vietnamese people to the conditions we suffered in our barrios within Aztlan-occupied Mexico. So it was definitely what we'll call, we in Unión del Barrio call an anti-colonial struggle. And it was very clear that it was an anti-colonial struggle. It was a case of RASA standing up and saying, you know what? We're not with this red, white, and blue dream. Chale con la guerra. And that was a big deal because how many of our people have died in wars, have died in, the most decorated ethnic group, right? And at the time during Vietnam, 6% of the population, maybe 10% of the population, 20% of the casualties in Vietnam. So always use this Carne de Cañon, always use an expendable force, always using things like the infantry. So that was important. The other reason that was important was because finally, we were starting to see really an identification, not with U.S. imperialism, but with the Vietnamese masses that were struggling to free their country, reunite their country under socialism, and actually kick out the foreign invaders. That was a real consciousness shift. And I think the state understood that as well, and that's why the repression was so savage. Why do we still commemorate it? I think that's an important question. I think even within what we call today movement circles, many activists, there's a lot of young people who call themselves activists who've come in during recent struggles. I'm talking about the whole, struggles around the raids and immigration and everything. Unfortunately, there's a whole generation of young people, and there's a whole generation of people, and I'm going up into their 20s, that don't know what August 29th was and don't know what the Chicano Moratorium was. And that's shocking to me. That's kind of like a Mexicano activist, a young Mexicano university activist, not knowing what October 2nd was. You know, it's kind of crazy. And so why do we have to commemorate it? I think that is because we need to always make sure that we uphold these days, not only because they're historical days and not only because we want to turn this into a high school reunion or something, but because we need to show that that form of struggle has to still exist, that we need to say things like Aztlán México Ocupado, that we need to, uphold fallen heroes like Rubén Salazar, like Ángel Díaz, like Lynn Ward, and most of all, and I think that this is probably a very long answer to what it might have been a short question, but I think most of all, the need to push militant struggle and organization, which was really what the moratorium was all about.
Yeah, and Pablo, I think you bring up a good point. August 29th is a very important event in the Chicano movement, but also in Chicano history in general. And yeah, we do need to have the younger generation connected to it, because we wouldn't have the spark of activism or organizing now if we don't go back into August 29th.
Definitely. You can't really separate those things. And I think one of the things that this government and this country, quote-unquote country, or this system tries to do, and let me say that it happens all over Latino America, it happens in Mexico, I've seen it many times, is there's this real attempt. And there's even an attempt by some forces that call themselves movement today to try to talk about the present as if it is divorced from the past. You know, I mean, I can remember, and it always has to do with a certain decade. You know, when the Berlin Wall collapsed, right? There was this whole talk about how the old schemes and the old forms of struggle and the old socialism was dead, and we had to toss that aside because it was a new time, right? And then, you know, in the year 2000, magically, people were talking about a new millennium, you know, and they were even saying, I remember they're saying in Spanish a lot in the south part of our homeland, or in Mexico, what's now called Mexico proper, la nueva forma de entender las cosas, you know, versus la vieja forma, right? You know, the new way of understanding struggle versus the old way of understanding struggle. And you know, really, so what we have is we have people that come up during those time periods, but it's very difficult because very few organizations are out there making a connection to the past. There's a lot of organizations out there today with people who know the past, who know the history, but they choose not to uphold the history because of what they're doing or not doing now and what their role is. And I think that's extremely important. So it's the task of independent organizations. It's the task of organizations, even if we may not agree on everything, but that still believe in raza self-determination, still believe this is our land, that still believe that, you know, that we need to struggle on our own terms. Dates like August 29th have to be upheld, you know, and commemorations like the 40th have to be upheld and have to be pushed at all levels. And, you know, because one of the things that's happened to us, I think, is, you know, and I think that this is kind of borne out, is one of the reasons that a lot of times when we're in the movement, it seems like we're reinventing the wheel, and we've done this before, when do we ever learn? Well, we don't ever learn because we've allowed too many times the opportunists to hijack our history. And that has to end.
We will be returning to Pablo Aceves' interview after this short clip from the Chicano series, The Quest for Homeland.
President Richard Nixon came to office in 1968, promising to reduce American troops in Vietnam. Instead, he widened the war. Opposition to Vietnam was taking hold in the Chicano community.
We had reached the point where we were going to say that, hey, we don't have to prove ourselves, feel a inferiority complex, and go out and serve in that war.
We're protesting against the discriminatory draft laws that give deferment to all the Anglo middle class people of this country, that make the heaviest burden of the war fall on the poor, fall on the Mexicano.
People were becoming expert at getting out of the war, you know, and so as more and more middle-class people, people that could afford lawyers, began to get deferments, the draft boards filled up their quotas with more of the poor, and particularly Mexican-American.
Mexican-American casualties were disproportionate to their numbers. In the Southwest, Mexican-Americans made up 12% of the population, but accounted for almost 20% of the region's deaths in Vietnam, according to many sources.
There was some dissent in our community about whether or not we should be protesting against the war, but it was generally a generational division. Young people were pretty much against it. Students were almost completely all against it.
Returning to Pablo Aceves' interview.
How many commemoration events have occurred, you know, since you've been involved in this struggle?
Well, actually, some people may know that I got involved about 25 years ago in 1985. Let me say that during that time, as you know, 1970 was the August 29th moratorium. Later on that year, and I think also in 1971, there was another, very early January of 71, and we can check on this, there was actually another demonstration where three people were shot and killed, including, in fact, one compañero who was from Hungary who was marching in solidarity with us that day, Gustav Montag, I believe. And so the moratorium didn't stop in 1970, and it wasn't broken immediately in 1970. Even during the years where, you know, if you looked at the mid to late 70s where there were, you know, the onslaughts by COINTELPRO, and people were getting locked up, and the repression was really coming down during the time that the movement was actually being militarily defeated. There were efforts to commemorate the moratorium. In 1980, I know this, in 1980, there were two efforts to commemorate the 10th anniversary. One was by a very honest nationalist forces. The other one was kind of hijacked by the League of Revolutionary Struggle, which is a relatively new organization at that time. And there wound up being two commemorations. As far as I knew and what I knew, there were kind of two commemorations for a few years there. But there was always an attempt. I know that, you know, with Unión del Barrio, we were actually formed. This is a few years before I joined the organization. But we were actually formed on August 29th, 1981. So the moratorium anniversary is actually our birthday, and this year we'll be 29 years old as an organization. I remember every year since I joined Unión del Barrio in 1987, we were involved at the time in something that had to do with the moratorium, either ourselves doing a commemoration, ourselves doing a forum, a public event, being involved one year in a Barrio Unity conference that we held, where we were actually able to bring down quite a few speakers, including Comrade Omali Eshitela, chairman of the African People Socialist Party. If you look around it during those times, and there was always that, you know, at the time we were in the process of the Partido de la Raza Unida First Encuentros, and then the idea of building a Frente, and later on with the Movimiento de Liberación Nacional, the MLN. And at that time, through us and the Partido principally, came out the idea that we build the 20th commemoration, we make a call. In December 2nd of 1989 at the East LA Library, we actually came together and formed a National Chicano Moratorium Committee, or I'll say reformed, to build the 20th and also to build a united, broad, independent response and movement that could struggle around the basic demands and the democratic and human rights of our gente throughout, you know, the occupied throughout Aztlan occupied Mexico. And so since I've been involved, this is kind of a short question, but it merits a long answer. Pretty much every year for quite a while, I was involved in something that had to do with the moratorium. I was very privileged to be elected National Coordinator of the NCMC from 1995 to 1999. And so the 25th actually was one of the events that I was involved in. I know that when we first formed, our first National Coordinator, also the founder of Unión del Barrio, Camarada Ernesto Bustillos, was our National Coordinator. And of course, Camarada Jaime Cruz, who's right now our National Coordinator, and the Compañeros heading up the efforts towards the 40th commemoration, and also did the 30th as well, in addition to quite a few other things that we did during the 90s, the anti-Cristóbal Colón 500 years in San Isidro, the 150th anniversary of Trujillo Guadalupe Hidalgo massive march in Tucson, the response to the Republicans in 1996 in San Diego. So we were involved in quite a few things, quite a few moratorium commemorations, and other mobilizations throughout the 90s.
We will return to Pablo Seves' interview after this short clip of Chicano Moratorium.
This is a moratorium. This is for La Raza. Yes, for us, and for the world to see. Because today is a day of history for all of La Raza, wherever they are. Throughout Latin America, throughout Mexico, wherever brown people exist, today is a day of history. And from this day on, La Raza Mexicana shall be history.
Chicanos are marching to protest the high casualty rate of our people in Vietnam. We have suffered 22% of all casualties in Vietnam, yet we only make up 5% of the total population here in the United States.
Returning to Pablo Seves' interview. What is the future of the Chicano Moratorium August 29th?
I think, you know, the future of the moratorium, the moratorium is something we have to put back on the front burner at this time. Well, it has to be on the front burner at this time, that whole mobilization, because right now You know, even though people are complacent and even though people are saying that, you know, the troops are out of Iraq, et cetera, U.S. imperialism all over the globe, as it goes into a very deep crisis and as it's being challenged, especially in Latino America, in ways that it, I don't think it thought possible 20 years ago when it thought that it had triumphed and that it was only a matter of time before the Cuban Revolution crumbled. Well, now you see you have revolution in Nicaragua, you have revolution in Bolivia, in Ecuador. You have, obviously, a great heroic revolution in Venezuela, and just profound changes and transformations happening, as in those other countries. And you see Cuba, you know, with its crises and with its blockade, really breaking out of that and taking world leadership. If you read some of the most recent things that have been written by Comandante Compañero Fidel Castro, you can see that there's still a cutting edge. So the U.S. is losing the ideological battle, and as it does that, and it's losing that battle of the American way of life versus socialism. Well, as it does that, is what I'm getting at, you know, imperialism is finding new ways to attack people all over the world and reach out its tentacles. Right now, you know, yes, the last combat troops are out of Iraq. Now, that says nothing about all the mercenaries they have there and the killers and the assassins and the Blackwater-type people. Right now, those troops are going to Afghanistan to bomb the people of Afghanistan. Right now, you know, because of the war on drugs, with an unelected president, Felipe Calderon, the U.S., the CIA, different operations, we probably won't hear about them for years. Right now, there's more of a push to militarize the society we live in. You know, you can't go anywhere without seeing Go Army stuff. You can't go to a baseball game without a salute to the troops. You know, people are bombarded. Our young people are being drafted to go be oppressors in record numbers. And not only oppressors in other places. You can see the National Guards at the border here in Arizona. You know, they have this horrible, these Nazi-like laws. In other states, they want to do them. You know, so there has to be a response from a movimiento that, you know, tells people, no, you're fighting on the wrong team. You need to be in the movimiento. You need to be fighting against those people that oppress us and people everywhere else. You know, we haven't done enough of that. You know, we haven't been able to articulate that as much as we should. The moratorium, I think, gives all of us an opportunity to really challenge that whole thing, to challenge, you know, the idea. I mean, you know, to challenge that whole, we have to carry American flags if we want immigration reform, and all this other crap that we hear, you know. And so the moratorium allows us to do that because the moratorium and its history is by nature anti-imperialist. It's anti-military. You know, and that was the first time that that was one of the largest concentrations like that. We have to build on that.
We will return to Pablo Seves' interview after this short clip of Chicano Moratorium.
We are a bronze people with a bronze culture. Before the world, before all of North America, before all our brothers on this bronze continent, we are a nation. We are a union of free pueblos. We are Aztlán.
Cuando me dicen que revolución, defiendo a mi raza con mucho.
A block east of the north end of the park, there is a liquor store. A few people were walking out of the store without paying for their merchandise. Somebody called the police.
The younger kid came back with the police. Two more squad cars. They pulled up right together, and they were the ones that they had their sirens and the lights. Another car pulled up, and all the police that were across the street had shotguns. And right then and there, I saw bottles.
At this point, there was a small crowd of people reacting to the overpresence of the police. The police had a choice of coming to the platform, using our mic, and asking our Chicano leaders to calm the situation, or to bring in reinforcements and to clear the whole park. Their answer was quick and without hesitation.
Soy diferente, soy color café.
returning to Pablo Seva's interview.
And then say things like, but we need, you know, responsible immigration enforcement. You know, that is ridiculous. And you know, I think that we have to make that connection. The moratorium did that. Okay, the moratorium took the anti-war movement, or they took the protests of the war in Vietnam all out of the hands of some white liberals, and they connected it to colonialism, what we were facing. We have to do the same thing. There is an agenda. There is an agenda we need to push, and like you said, that's it. The war is not over there. You know, there was one we used to see all the time, and I it's kind of a famous or infamous picture of me back in 1985 carrying a sign. I actually had a full head of hair at the time, so people think that's very funny, but it said, "Our war is here in Aslan." That's the message that young people need, and that's the message we have to internalize somehow.
Yeah, and we have to make those connections, you know, the connections that the testing ground for this empire building has always been Latin America. And right. Sometimes we forget that, or people are not told that in what they are taught.
Exactly. You know, the other day I was listening to a talk show over here. It was actually in Spanish. It was really surprising, though. You know, one person, I think some of you may know him, Enrique Morones, was on talking about an action that they were having here in San Diego against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And it was really amazing because there was people calling, and these were Mexicanos that were calling, saying things like, you know, well, the protest should be against Mexico, not the U.S., because Mexico is the reason that people come here. But people don't realize that what you just referred to as empire building, the fact that people have to cross a false border to chase stolen resources, is because of imperialism, and that the government in Mexico, whether it be the PRI, whether it be the PAN, is actually nothing more than their lapdogs. And that whole policy can be traced right back to Washington. The fact that there's no land to farm and everything can be traced right back to Washington. And what we're now seeing is an ethnic cleansing. But see, one of the places that I think us, compared to some organizations, and I'm not trying to, you know, sow disunity or anything, but one of the places where I think we have maybe a difference from some forces out there is that we're not saying it's an aberration. We're not saying that it's something that, oh my God, I can't believe it's happening. We've seen it happen. We know it's happened throughout history. What we're saying is the only thing that's going to stop it is a strong movimiento that's dedicated to self-determination. There's not going to be a substitute. There's not going to be, you know, there's not going to be a shortcut. There's not going to be a gimmick or anything that we're going to get. You know, we're not going to sneak in with white shirts and red and American flags. So the moratorium's important, and its spirit's important, because the moratorium upheld militant struggle, and it upheld struggle on our terms. You know, way too often what we're trying to do is we're trying to win over, right? We always hear this. No, we can't have a march and yell loud because, you know, the white liberals aren't going to like it. You know, and it's because I don't think any other colonized people out there in the world has those kind of discussions. You know, you don't hear Israeli Arabs or Palestinians saying, "Oh, we're not going to have a loud demonstration in Jerusalem because the Israeli settlers won't like it." You know, you're not going to hear that. But here we have been locked into this paradigm. You guys remember, I'm sure, both of you, my compañeros, remember a few years ago in 2006 when people wanted to go out into the street, and immediately the so-called leaders went out there. Said, no, wear a white T-shirt. Now, white T-shirts in Mexico and Latino America are what the right wing wears, right?
Yeah.
No, you have to carry an American flag because if you see a Mexican flag, it's going to be blah, 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 blah. Well, on St. Patrick's Day, the Irish carry all kinds of Irish flags. Nobody says anything to them. You know, so, I mean, things like this, and it's directly tied to the colonial and the land question. We have to keep pushing that. And as you said, compañero, you know, we have to keep pushing it. You know what? You don't have to go to Iraq to see oppression. All you got to do is go around the block. And if that doesn't hit you in the face enough, you know, take a trip out to Arizona. Don't buy anything out there because we're boycotting that state. But, you know, take a trip out there and see ethnic cleansing for yourself out in the hot sun.
Yeah. And Pablo, we're going to come to a closing, but I have two questions. One of the questions I came across your book Stolen Revolution, and I just want to know what any more writings you're going to be doing. And also, the last question is, what moratorium events are you guys doing in San Diego?
Okay. Well, first of all, on Stolen Revolution, I'm glad there's a few copies still out there. We're looking at maybe a new printing. I'm actually working on a book, and it's taken me a long time because there's a lot of other projects that I'm doing at the same time, plus just the day-to-day of being an Unión del Barrio militante. But one of the things that I'm working on is a book that kind of chronicles the years of struggle in the 80s, the student movement, the Chicano student movement, which is kind of where I, you know, got into struggle. I joined Unión del Barrio in 1987. I joined Mecha in 1985, and at the time, there was a very serious struggle with the League of Revolutionary Struggle, which was an organization that existed at the time that, you know, we felt had some very unprincipled tendencies, was really a multinational organization that a lot of people felt was trying to exert undue influence and control over Mecha, the Chicano student movement, and it kind of coincided with the time when Unión del Barrio had put out an excellent position paper on the Liga and on that kind of ideological imperialism. Those struggles, which no one's really chronicled, I've kind of taken it upon myself and under consultation with some compañeros from Unión del Barrio, and I have to say here and on your show, from both of you, with some documentation. So I want to thank you very publicly for helping me to obtain some of that. It's been valuable. I'm looking at finishing the book probably within the next 3 to 6 months and then getting some editions. We've got some people helping me with it. That's one of the newest things that I'm working on. I'm very excited. We're very excited about this project. Finally, the moratorium, we're going to be caravanning up on Saturday to the marcha. We'll be starting, of course, at Belvedere Park, and we'll be marching to Salazar Park. Some people are going to be speaking that we know. Also, here in San Diego at 6 p.m. Day after tomorrow, which is Thursday, August 26th, we will be having a forum on the Chicano moratorium. Some of the speakers will be compañera Judy de los Santos from Unión del Barrio, compañero Jaime Cruz, who's the current and past coordinator of the NCMC, national coordinator, camarada David Rico, who's the Brown Berets of Aslan, who has a long history in the movement, including the takeover of Chicano Park, the Chicano Clinic, just years and years of struggle. The compañero also was at the moratorium in 1970. And finally, yours truly, to give myself, to give some analysis as far as how Unión del Barrio sees the struggle today. So, I, you know, that's what we're doing. We have been leafleting. We have been making some calls out there to try to get people. You know, we urge everybody to put this on your Facebook, anywhere you can. We need to fill the streets on Saturday. And we need to take a strong message that 40 years y que, aquí estamos, no nos vamos. We're going to keep on struggling.
Well, Pablo, thank you for being on our show today. But I guess we're not outside agitators in our own struggle. Remember, we'd be called outside agitators?
Right. I remember that was 1998, and that was on the John C. Scott show. And I had considerably less of a good time with him than with you two compañeros as hosts. So I want to thank you, too, for having me on the show, for having, you know, us on the show, for getting the word out. I think that this type of propaganda and media is what we need. You know, we're going to constantly be distorted and twisted by Fox and Glenn Beck and all these other people. We need to get our own media, and you compañeros are doing a great job of really getting the word out and developing an audience of conscious people that's only going to grow and spread, just as our movement will. So thank you.
Okay, Pablo, thank you for your time. In closing, we'd like to make some comments about August 29th. We feel it's an important event, and we have to inform every generation about this important event. Jose, do you have any comments to end this show?
What's the legacy of this event? Why August 29th? Why is it so important? What's the importance of it? Why people still commemorate this historical event? And this event will be considered one of the historical most brutal attacks in the history of Chicano Mexicanos here in the U.S. Empire. Will people still, in 50 years or 20 years, still look at this event and look back and say, this event was very brutal?
Well, say, I have to agree with you. This is a very important event for our community. August 29th to always have some type of event. We have to remember the individuals who passed away. We also have to remember the individuals who passed away for struggle for our educational rights, for our human rights, and for our civil rights. So again, August 29th should be remembered.
In conclusion, August 29, 1970, Chicano Moratorium March against the Vietnam War and other issues that affect our society will be remembered. Good night and good luck.
This podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status not only of Chicanos and other indigenous peoples, but all oppressed peoples. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that RASA must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
This is Radio Free Aslan.
Broadcasting from
behind
enemy lines.
As J's, what we love the best.